Welcome to Hallis Intrigue, the Chicago Sun-Times Bears podcast. I'm Jason Leisure. We've got a special guest today, Herb Howard from the Bigs. We're going to talk about all things Bears going into the Saints game, Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, and their defense right after this. All right, welcome in. Bears-Saints, not a huge game on the schedule going in, but you look at where they stand right now, Herb, and they cannot afford to lose this. They are 3-2 coming off the back-to-back 25-24 wins in Las Vegas and Washington, and now there's an opportunity here when you look at their schedule. These next four teams, I'm not going to say they're bad teams because Baltimore is in there, and I just am not ready to write them off even at 2-5, I think they are. But all teams that are struggling. The next four games are all against teams that are struggling, starting with the Saints on Saturday.
Yeah, no, this season, the schedule certainly looks different than you thought it did initially. You looked at this part of the schedule, you said, wait, they got to go to Baltimore, they got to go to Cincinnati, they got to go to Philly, and now due to injury or just poor play, that doesn't seem as daunting a task as it did before. And so now you got the Bears sitting here at 3-2. If you can take care of business at home, you get to 4-2 against the Saints, and then you go on Baltimore, go on to Baltimore feeling pretty confident about yourself against a team that's just not playing good ball right now.
It's pretty crazy when you think about the Saints because they're not what they used to be. It's been a long time since they were really good, yet the Bears have not beat them in forever. The Bears are 0 for their last 8 against the Saints. They haven't beaten them since 2008. Let's start with Caleb Williams because they're going to go as he goes usually. What I'm seeing right now with Caleb Williams is a guy who is playing better. There's no doubt about it. In my mind, just aesthetically, you can see it. The numbers back it up. He is playing better than last season. But he's not great yet. I mean, there still seems to be, and I say this in more of a positive way than a negative way, there's still a lot of untapped areas of growth for Caleb.
Yeah, there's still a lot of runway left for him, but he's comfortable in the pilot seat now. You can tell that different than you could see it last year, and you can tell just watching the games. You can see it when you watch the film, and the stats bear out the same story. And so I think you can definitely tell that, but I think also you got to look at this thing through some bit of a realistic lens and say, well, you got a team that's got seven takeaways in the last two games. They won both of those games, but they won them both by 1 point on the very last play of the game. You needed a blocked field goal, and then you needed a field goal of your own. And when you get seven takeaways in two games, you don't really expect that to come down to a 1 point last second game, which tells me the offense has to be more efficient, especially when you look at how things went out in Vegas. All of those takeaways put the Bears in plus field position, and they constantly came away with field goals or no points. So you got to be able to take advantage of a defense that's constantly getting you the ball back and putting up more points so it doesn't come down to these last second situations.
That's true, but the defense has to be better too. Because when you say that, you make a good point that if you get four takeaways in Vegas and three in Washington, you should not be winning those games by 1 point. You should be running away with those. You also, if you're getting four takeaways 1 week and three the next, you shouldn't be giving up 24 points probably. The Bears are giving up they're giving up like 28 points a game. I think they're second worst against the run. They're giving up the eighth highest passer rating. It's hard to look at that defense and trust it, although it has worked. I don't know that getting three or four takeaways every week is a plan.
No, I don't know that's sustainable, right? And I think that's what kind of leaves you not feeling as confident as maybe you should coming to a home game against a team like the Saints. People are like, oh, they can blow them out. It's like, I don't think the Bears are good enough to blow anybody out right now. They're not playing good enough on either side of the ball. The takeaways are phenomenal. You would love to keep that going, and you give them all the credit in the world for how they're taking the ball away right now. But they are giving up a lot of points still. They're giving up a lot of yards. And offensively, they're just not cashing in on these extra possessions. So I don't think right now they've put it all together in a way that would allow me to comfortably say, oh, yeah, they're going to beat the Saints by 17 points, no problem.
Yeah, I think that when you're the Bears, you're looking at a team like a few weeks ago, you're looking at Dallas, and you're saying, oh, that's a terrible defense, perfect opportunity for the Bears. Other teams are looking at the right. Bears' defense that way, too.
That's exactly what these teams are thinking. I mean, you had Washington coming in, number one rushing offense. They were running the ball very, very well. You give the Bears credit. They didn't allow them to run the ball at that clip on them. They got T.J. Edwards back. They got Kyler Gordon back. They're trying to, you know, get healthy and also gain some chemistry defensively to stop this running game that they've been really, really giving up against these teams. And so, you know, teams are looking to get right against the Bears, and the Bears are looking to get right against other teams, and they're slowly starting to change that narrative where maybe teams are starting to say, hey, we got to be really, really cautious with the football and what we're trying to do against the Bears because they're playing better on that side of the ball right now.
One of the interesting things that I'm trying to make sense of with the Bears is DeAndre Swift. And I've been trying to make sense of this the entire time because he was a huge free agent acquisition for them last year before Ben Johnson got here. And then Ben Johnson comes in and inherits DeAndre Swift. But they also have their own history that goes back to Detroit where, you know, DeAndre Swift had some productive games, productive seasons under Ben Johnson. Also, Ben Johnson was part of the group that was plenty content to trade him away for very little and restart with Jahmyr Gibbs. You come into this season, and we all, I think the media and probably, you know, people who follow the Bears at large are looking at DeAndre Swift and saying, I don't know if this guy is a fit. Yeah. I don't know if he alone, especially without, you know, how in Detroit they have Sonic and Knuckles. This is pretty much just Sonic. Although I think he's even more, a little more limited than Jahmyr Gibbs because he's so small. You know, can DeAndre Swift be their workhorse back? Probably not. He's too shifty. He's too lateral. He's too side to side. It's been a clear point of emphasis from Ben Johnson and Eric Bieniemy, the running backs coach, to get him into more of a power runner mindset. There's only so much DeAndre Swift's going to be able to do as a power runner at that size, but get him trying to run more north and south. They keep saying, Herb, this is the part I want you to see if you can explain. Mm-hmm. They keep saying, Ben Johnson and Eric Bieniemy, he's doing it. He's doing it. This is what we wanted him to do. We're seeing it. He's doing it. DeAndre Swift keeps saying, I'm the same guy. Yeah. I'm not doing anything different.
Yeah, I think DeAndre Swift has always thought of himself as a complete back who can run in between the tackles, who can bounce it outside. He's just as good on first down as he is on third down. That's what he believes. I've seen him show flashes of that ability to run inside the tackles, to run behind his pads, put his pads down, and get tough yards. But more often than not, you see him try to bounce it. You also have to kind of balance that conversation with the offensive line that the Bears had last year and a still developing offensive line that they have this year. So I think what you can definitely see from DeAndre Swift is when the play is blocked up for him, he has dynamic ability to get out in space and create explosive plays in the run game or in the passing game. So I think the Bears and Coach Johnson are just trying to look at it and say, let's make sure we're doing everything right in front of him and then allow him to do his part. You know, some backs, you got the Saquon Barkley's of the world or whomever who can get traffic 2-3 yards deep in the backfield and still make something out of it. I don't know that Dre is that back, but if it's blocked up for him, I think he does have the willingness to stay on the track for as long as he can, but then he also has the ability to bounce it out and turn 6-yard runs into 30-yard runs. And so I think they like his skill set. I don't know that it's as complete as he feels it is, but I think he's more than serviceable back. I think he can be really, really good, and I think he can continue to have a lot of success going forward this season.
Well, you love that threat. You love the threat of his speed, where if one thing breaks,
yep,
as it did on the 55-yard touchdown pass where he slipped one tackle and then it's over for 55 yards. I think he slipped that tackle. He caught that ball like 4 yards past the line of scrimmage, probably slipped that tackle on the sideline at about 15,
yeah,
and then another 35 from there where it's just over.
Yep.
No, he's outrunning everybody.
You know that.
That's cool, and you've seen that from him before. I think you can get that as a runner too, where that's a big part to me, just trying to piece this together from the outside when he's saying one thing and the coaches are saying another.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then looking at the actual evidence of what you're getting now from him, I think there's some trust that has been built between him and Ben Johnson, the play caller, where Ben Johnson, with Eric Bieniemy obviously involved too, is telling him, trust me. Just trust these play calls that I'm giving you. Hit those holes like you're Derrick Henry or somebody.
Right.
Pretend that you're David Montgomery and just hit those holes. And I'm telling you, if you keep doing that, eventually a couple of them are going to snap and you're going to go from 2 yards, 4 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards, 30 yards.
Yep. I think that also this the demeanor of this coaching staff, Coach Johnson and certainly Coach Bieniemy, I get you on the developing relationship, but I don't think it has a whole lot to do with trust. I don't think they give a darn if he trusts what they're saying or not. This is how you're going to do it if you're going to be the feature back. We like Monongai if for nothing else than the fact that he will stay on this track for as long as he can possibly stay on it. If you don't learn to do that, then we'll get him the ball or we'll get somebody else the ball. And I think that just over the course of time, DeAndre has come to realize that, hey, if I do stay on this track, it may pop, right? If I give these offensive linemen just another time or just to trust them that it's going to open up where it should open up, then it'll work out. So I don't think Eric Bieniemy cares if Dre trusts what he said or not. Just listen to what I'm saying.
I think they do. When you say if what you just like hypothetically guessed actually happened and they came and said, we'll just give the ball to Kyle Manungai, we'll just give the ball to who, that's a bluff. DeAndre Swift has more leverage than that because there is nobody here at running back besides him. They didn't do anything about that position in the offseason.
There was literally a practice where he was the only running back
because of injuries.
So how are you going to tell me I'm going to get a ball to somebody else?
Kyle Manungai is not necessarily making a roster in the other 31 cities or whatever because, I mean, a seventh-round pick as a running back doesn't usually have a very good chance of making a roster. He had it here because – it's DeAndre Swift and nobody. Yeah. Roschon Johnson is a total unknown. He just played his first snap of offense Monday night. And Travis Homer is mostly a special teams player. So, I mean, the door was wide open for Kyle Manungai or any undrafted free agent to at least get a spot. But there's a reason why DJ Moore is playing some running back and why they're not really going to they're not giving Manungai and those guys a lot of carries because Swift – you know, flawed as he might be, he is by
far and away
far your best option. So I do think there has to be some trust. There has to be some buy-in from him and them of, hey, we can do something with your skill set, and we need you to believe us that we're going to do that. It, because they have a mutual interest in that, by the way. Ben Johnson needs this offense to work and work now. And DeAndre Swift is essentially in a contract year. They can easily get out of that for next after this season. So whether he's playing to secure his future here or playing for what he'll get on the open market, it's really important for both sides right now.
I should know exactly where he is right now, but I don't. But I'd still be willing to bet he can get 1,000.
Yeah, and I thought there was a chance going in. I thought this last year too, and it wasn't the case. But I thought going into this season, he could be their most productive offensive player because he's got this great history, especially with Ben Johnson.
Yep.
Of being a threat in the passing game. We haven't seen that much of that yet, even though he did have the 55-yarder. That was a catch. That was a receiving play. But I think that there's still even more that can be done there.
I think there's a lot that can be done there as well. Part of it is Caleb developing and trusting to accept the check down for the 3, 4, 5 yards and see if it can turn into a 55-yarder, which is rare, probably not going to happen most often, but it can still keep you ahead of the chains. And so I think Caleb is developing there. But I also think the offense as a whole is developing to start to figure out where they can create these mismatches. You've got all these receivers with Rome and DJ and getting Luther involved now, Olamide Zaccheaus, you got the two tight ends. There should be opportunities where you can find to get DeAndre Swift man-to-man, one-on-one with the linebacker, and then he's able to run arrow routes or wheel routes or whip routes that should get him open and create an offensive mismatch. So I think there's a lot left for him to do in the passing game as well. I agree.
One of the things I like about you and the way that you understand football is you know the nuts and bolts of it. You know the technical side of it from playing yourself and from studying. But you also are excellent at reading people. And I was just talking to someone about Ben Johnson the other day and saying, well, you know when you hire him, you're getting a great strategist.
Right.
That's unanimous around the league. Everybody would say, Ben Johnson, technically sound, great strategist, great play caller, and even go a step beyond that and say, phenomenal quarterback's coach, quarterback whisperer. I like what I've seen from Ben Johnson in the last couple of weeks, though, where it's like he's accessing his Dan Campbell side. There is a persona and a confidence that he's bringing that you can see the effect of that, and I see it in Caleb Williams more than anyone else. If you think about the main voice in Caleb's ear for the past 9 months being Ben Johnson, who has this almost kind of like Tom Brady, confident, bold personality, and you weigh that against last year having Shane Waldron in his ear, I think it's night and day. You could easily tell which one of those would resonate more with a guy like Caleb Williams.
No, I think you definitely see that. Like, you see Ben Johnson's footprint of his personality coming through with Caleb's growing confidence and just his demeanor in and of itself. Somebody asked me I think it was a radio interview, about, you know, how has Caleb progressed off the field in terms of his leadership and being a teammate. And I see a huge difference in him just in the locker room. And I just mean where he is in the locker room. I think back to last year, and he would come in the locker room, and he would go to his locker, and that's where he would be. And now I see him at DJ's locker and at Rome's locker, and I see him down on the defensive locker, and he's playing basketball, and he's talking stuff, and he's, you know, joking with guys all around the locker room. I was like, that's not the person I saw last year. Now, albeit he's a rookie, he's trying to come in and acclimate himself, that's fine.
It's hard for any rookie to come in and run the show.
Yeah,
and
for
that's
sure.
That's what they wanted him to do, and they should have. He's the quarterback, but that's tough.
No, it's tough, but just seeing his own personality. Even some of the rookies, like this year, you got guys like Jahdae Walker. He's a rookie who hasn't played a meaningful snap yet, but his personality comes through as soon as you meet the kid. You see him in the locker room, he's very, very comfortable. He's walking around playing his music, eclectic as it is. He's playing his music like he's a 10-year vet, like I control the music in here, like DeMarcus Walker used to do in these years past. So I think that, you know, just allowing your personality to come through, you see that a little bit more, and I think it's allowed him to grow and improve his relationships with his teammates. I think you see that on the field, and I think you see it off the field.
A lot of what you're seeing from Caleb Williams right now, and I don't know if everybody on the outside would make this connection the way that we would being around him so much for the last 2 years. Yeah. I think this is what he always wanted.
Agreed.
I think he wanted structure. He wanted to be coached hard. Part of that, though, there has to be this security net or, you know, something like that, this backbone to it of, you know, what you're being told is correct. Mm-hmm. You know that you are being coached by someone with expertise. Caleb Williams could not have possibly thought that last year. We didn't think that last year. When you went into last season, even if you were optimistic about where the Bears were headed, which I was, and I was wrong, the weak spot you're looking at is the coaching staff in that in that situation. You're saying, I like the job Ryan Poles has done. I like the quarterback. I like some of the pieces they've got on both sides of the ball. It's head coach and coordinator, offensive coordinator, where I'm getting stuck, and that proved to be their undoing. I think that Caleb Williams has often been misunderstood as a guy who just isn't serious, isn't going to listen very well to coaching because he thinks he knows best. And I have not found that to be the case about him. I have found a guy who is extremely driven and has craved what he's getting right now. And this is not a profound conclusion to come to for me to say, if we take the number one quarterback of that draft class coming in talent-wise, and we pair him with the number one coaching candidate available as an offensive coach too, that's going to work.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's going to work. And I think you're seeing the signs of it. It's not clicking yet. They're five games in. But you're seeing the signs of it heading the right way.
You feel much better about the potential for Caleb to hit his ceiling with Coach Johnson than you ever did with Coach Flus or Coach Waldron. Like, you just didn't feel like he was going to hit his ceiling. And I think that's what you were kind of seeing from him. He's always wanted to be great, and I think he's always been willing to work at it. But he wasn't feeling like that path was going to get him there. And I believe that after every game, whoever he trusts about football, whether it's his dad or other coaches or whomever, trainers, it's like they're leaving the game questioning what was happening from the coaches, the game plan, the play calling. And when you're in a situation like that, that's going to come through. And now he's in a situation where he trusts what the coaches are doing in terms of game plan and play calling. Whether or not they execute it to the highest level every single play or every drive or every game, that's a different conversation. But you feel like, if I get what he's asking me to do right, I can be the best player that I can possibly be. And I think that's all any of these players want.
It was around this time last year that they lost to New England at home. Mm-hmm. And Caleb Williams, that was the beginning of him being asked questions about, does Matt Eberflus know what he's doing, paraphrasing. You contrast that with him after the Washington game. Some of it was a little over the top, saying, I wake up every day happy to be coached by Ben Johnson or something like that, although he probably is because he's seeing results from it. But there was something specific he got into there where he was talking about a play where they get to the line. He's thinking, this doesn't look right. I think it was his touchdown run. He's thinking, this doesn't look like this is going to work. But he's got this trust because everything Ben Johnson tells him in a meeting room then materializes in practice. Everything they work on during the week materializes on Sundays or Monday night in this case. So he's like, okay, we do it anyway. If he sees it, he thinks we've got it, then we do it anyway, and it works.
Confidence comes through proof of concept, right? You say, this is what it's going to be, and then I get out there on a game day, and that's what it is. I have no choice but to really start to have faith in what you're saying and lean all the way into it. And then you start to feel really, really good about that. And I think they're seeing that offensively. I think they're seeing it defensively as well. we talked to the passing game coordinator and secondary coach Al Harris today. I did, and he was just like, listen, those interceptions that you're seeing, these are things that we run in practice. And so you go back to the Raiders game and the couple of picks that KB, Kevin Byer, had. Those were straight out of the practice plan. And Kevin Byer saw them both, and he was like, I'm going to jump on these. And so I think you're starting to see those guys just understand that what we're being coached is what we are seeing. And that's very, very refreshing, especially if you've been a Bear for any time.
Kevin Byard, by the way, since you brought him up, just having a phenomenal season at whatever age he is. I think he's in his 10th or 11th year. And there's so many of these guys that the Bears get that seem like they're kind of at the end, and the other, and a lot of other, especially good teams, are not in on them. And the Bears will take them because they're short at whatever position that is. And then it doesn't work out. They end up being, the rest of the league was right. This guy is done. That's not the case with Kevin Byard. Kevin Byard has been such a good find for them. Let's look at the game, Herb. We'll go to the Sun-Times predictions. Patrick Finley has the Bears winning 24-21 in overtime. That is about as tight as it gets. I've got the Bears much more comfortably at 30-20, although I told you earlier today we were talking off mic that, you know, I probably started the week thinking they're going to blow out the Saints, and then I gradually, day by day, talk myself into this being a closer and closer game. Mark Potash has the Bears winning 20-13. Scoop Jackson calls for the blowout, 38-22. And Steve Greenberg has the Bears 27-16. So across the board, the Sun-Times writers are picking the Bears. What do you got?
I think the Bears have an opportunity to get out really, really fast in the first quarter. The Bears are averaging, I think, 7.3 points per game in the first quarter, and the Saints are giving up like 10.8. They're 32nd in the league in terms of points they've given up in the first quarter, and the Bears are third offensively. So I think there's an opportunity there for the Bears to get out fast. I wouldn't be surprised to see Coach Johnson dial up some trick thing or whatever early. So if they can get out fast and maybe they have a 13 or 14-point first quarter, then I feel like they have an opportunity to get away from them. So I'll say that they'll do that right now, but I'm talking myself away from that too each day, because, like, I don't know if they're that good enough to blow people out. It's like what we were talking about earlier.
They're not good enough for you to assume anything.
Not to assume.
They're not good enough somebody. For you to say, okay, they'll take care of this.
Yeah, they're not that team, right?
And so I saw them lose, what, 19-3 to New England last year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so that concerns me greatly. But I'll say that the Bears will go ahead and get it done. I'll go 31-16.
Okay, so handily, solid. Not running away like crazy, but solidly walking away with it. If they do what you say and they get ahead early, and this has been a big thing for the Bears, scoring early, you know, productive first drives and first quarters, which was a huge problem last year for them, it just changes the game. Last year, the way you play offensively, last year this would happen, the opposite would happen for them, and they'd have to spend the whole rest of the game trying to throw their way back into it. If they're able to get early leads, you know, 10-0 out of the gate, something like that, now you can do whatever you want to do. Now you can have one of these clock-eating, run-heavy drives like they had against Dallas, and it just totally opens up the playbook because it's not obvious what you're doing anymore. Patrick Finley will be back with me after the game Sunday. Herb, you're the best, man. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And we will catch you guys next time.
What happens when you say yes for an entire year? Join WBEZ on October 26th for an evening with Titan of Television Shonda Rhimes as she recounts lessons from her best-selling memoir, Year of Yes. Tickets at WBEZ.org/events.